Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling the Trinity, how Christian doctrine understands God as one, but also Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Right. It's a concept that, well, it can feel pretty complex, almost like a puzzle.
Definitely. But our mission today is to unpack it clearly, using the sources you've shared. We want to look at a couple of common misunderstandings.
Yeah, specifically modalism and subordinationism, and then explore a more, let's say, integrated idea called perichoresis.
Okay, great. So let's dive right in. Modalism. What's the basic idea there?
Well, think of modalism as saying God is just one single being who sort of appears in different modes or forms over time.
So not Father, Son, Spirit all at once, but sequentially, like wearing different hats.
Exactly. Like yeah. God is the Father for a bit, then acts as the Son, then the Spirit, not distinct persons operating together simultaneously.
Got it. And our sources mentioned Praxius and Sibelius as early proponents.
That's right. And a common way this thinking shows up, even subtly, is what's called the method of appropriation.
Appropriation? You mean like assigning specific jobs?
Yeah, like saying creation only belongs to the Father, or redemption only to the Son, sanctification only to the Spirit.
Ah, I see. One source mentioned Kuyper describing Sibelianism almost like life stages, you know, Father for childhood, Son for sin awareness, Spirit for growth.
That's a good illustration. But the core problem, as Kuyper noted, is that it collapses the distinct persons. It ends up being one person playing different roles,
which ultimately undermines the idea of three distinct persons within the Godhead.
Exactly. It collapses the three into the one.
Okay. So what about the other error, subordinationism? The name itself kind of suggests a ranking.
It does. Subordinationism essentially makes the Son and the Holy Spirit somehow less divine than the Father.
Less divine. How so?
Well, it might view Christ more as, say, the principle behind creation or divine instrument, rather than being fully God in the same way the Father is God.
The sources pointed to Arianism as a prime example, called it a pluralist heresy that divides the substance, even though Arius insisted on God's unity.
Precisely. Arianism results in a hierarchy within the Trinity. The Son and Spirit are seen as, well, subordinate. Their actual being isn't considered fully equal to the Father's.
And this comes from maybe trying too hard to define God's transcendence, separating God's inner being from God's actions?
Often, yes. It struggles with the deep interconnectedness. But Gregory of Nazianzus had a great counter.
Oh, yeah. What was that?
He argued that the name Father itself points to the relation to the Son. It doesn't imply a difference in essence or, you know, divine status.
Ah, so it's about relationship, not rank.
Exactly. Subordinationism misses that relational core. Both these views, modalism and subordinationism, try to simplify the mystery, but they end up distorting it. One merges, the other grades.
Okay, so those are the pitfalls. Let's move to perichoresis. Sounds quite different.
It really is. It comes from the Greek tradition, originally used more in Christology, actually.
And what does it mean in terms of the Trinity?
Perichoresis describes this mutual indwelling, this interpenetration of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Each person is distinct, yet fully involved in the others and in God's work in the world, what theologians call the economy.
Mutual indwelling.
Yes.
So not separate jobs, but a kind of shared simultaneous action.
Yes, precisely. They coin here. Each person is fully present and active in the work of the others. It emphasizes communion, the loving relationship between the persons, as being central to who God is.
So it's not some unknowable substance behind the persons, but the relationship is the essence, in a way.
That's a good way to put it. It stresses their joint operation, which corrects the imbalances of the other two views. There's this idea of mutual authorization, realization, empowerment.
Interesting. One source even used a human analogy, like, we're called into being by the Father, live in diverse relationships like the Son, witnessed by the Spirit.
It's a helpful picture. And it's not just an Eastern concept. Even Calvin quoted Gregory of Nazianzus on the inseparable unity and Trinity, showing resonance there, too.
And the word itself, perichoresis.
Yeah, it comes from Greek words relating to space and containing and going forward. It paints a picture of dynamic movement and intimate relationship, a sort of divine dance.
So perichoresis holds the unity and diversity together. Each depends on the others.
Exactly. The diversity is in the unity, the diversity. It grounds both.
Okay, let's try to sum this up. We had modalism,
which collapses the persons into one playing different roles.
Then subordinationism,
which ranks the persons, making the Son and Spirit less than the Father.
And finally, perichoresis,
which reveals this interdependent communion, a dynamic, loving relationship where Father, Son, and Spirit are equally God, fully distinct, yet mutually indwelling and working together.
It's a profoundly different picture, which leaves us with a final thought for you, the listener. If God is fundamentally this kind of interconnected, mutually indwelling relationship, how might that change the way we view our own relationships, our communities, even our understanding of love itself?
Definitely something worth pondering.
Indeed. Thanks for exploring these depths with us today.